No more in Alabama, what it means in Indiana. Congressional leaders reach a tax bill deal. That, plus syringe exchange extensions and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 15th, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Alabama Republican Senate candidate Roy Moore, accused of sexual assault, narrowly lost his race to Democrat Doug Jones.
Jones's win makes him the first Democrat elected to the U.S. Senate from Alabama since 1992. Many Republicans across the country had backed away from Roy Moore in recent weeks after allegations surfaced that Moore had assaulted young teenage girls in the past. Yet in the days just before Tuesday's election, many of those Republicans, including President Donald Trump and the Republican National Committee, once again rallied behind Moore. Congressman Luke Messer, himself a Senate candidate, had weeks ago said Moore should step aside, but this week a campaign spokesperson said Messer believed Moore's service should be decided solely by Alabama voters. Fellow Congressman and Senate candidate Todd Rokita went further. While he'd originally said the allegations, if true, should disqualify Moore from office, Rokita this week told WTTV that he'd be comfortable with Moore, citing his anti-abortion views.
Will Hoosier voters remember that Todd Rokita was comfortable with Roy Moore? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Kip Two, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Kip Two, it looked an awful lot like Moore was going to win in the lead up to Tuesday, and maybe that was behind what Todd Rokita said on Sunday, but do you think he regrets coming around on Roy Moore?
Well, I think Indiana Republicans have a choice to make here, and it's going to be interesting to watch over the course of the next few months. Are they the party of Roy Moore and Donald Trump, or are they going to be the party of Richard Lugar? And I think it's a difficult thing for them to have to choose because the base is more with Rokita and Roy Moore. I think in a general election, they will very much regret having the RNC put money behind Roy Moore. And the National Party going all in for the guy.
Is this, and we've seen Todd Rokita have a few of these sort of issues, is this one that maybe is fine in the primary but not so fine in the general election, if he gets there?
Yes. I mean, Todd Rokita is making, and we're going to talk about another example of this later in the show, he's making a clear, hard play for evangelical Republicans, for the evangelical right base. That may favor him and help him in May. He's going to have to change that up a little bit. What's not clear to me yet is, does he believe that 16 will be like 18, and that if he just is in lockstep with Trump and lockstep with that part of the party, that he can survive and win in a general election? I think we just don't know the answer to that question yet. But right now, it's a sound strategy absent Roy Moore, which is clearly like an exceptional case with its own. With its own downside. Now in Indiana, the choice that Kip references, we've already made that choice. We're the party of Eric Holcomb. We're the party of a governor who is picking issues that he cares about people. He's picking the right issues at the right time. They're going to help as many people as possible. And he's incredibly popular. I mean, if you look at the most recent polling, he's in the mid 60s, while the sitting Republican president is in the mid 40s. I mean, he's plus 20. Favorable over where the sitting Republican president is right now. So we've already made that choice in Indiana. The Indiana Republican Party is different than the National Republican Party, and voters think of it differently. They have now for over a decade.
So, John Schwanis, will the party of Eric Holcomb support Todd Rokita in the primary?
Well, let's keep in mind, it seems to me the party of Eric Holcomb, or at least Eric Holcomb's inner circle and what's inside his own noggin, is he's been very careful, it seems to me, to tack to the middle, to be more of the Lugar wing of the party, if only by not by omission, by not talking about red meat issues. You go back to his agenda last session, you look at his agenda this session, it's about good government, you know, delivering the delivery of services and making government effective. He hasn't really gone out of his way to enter a lot of he's following the advice that Mitch Daniels gave and got in trouble for a few years ago about let's have a moratorium on social issues. Maybe that's what Eric Holcomb's doing. He's just not announcing it. So that's, I think, has been effective. As far as the recollection of voters about this position that Todd Rokita took, as I've said on all of these things, it's only the memory of voters is only as good as the ability of the opponent to jog the memory. And if it becomes an issue, great. In some ways, having Roy Moore lose might have, in an odd way, been a good thing because you already had the promise of an ethics investigation. That was going to be headline news for months.
Except that Donald Trump has the same problem, and I think Democrats are pivoting to
the
reason Roy Moore lost Alabama had as much to do with all the accusations as anything else for the reason Roy Moore lost, and the president has the same problem.
Yeah, but if Luther's on the ballot in Alabama on Tuesday, he wins by 20.
Yeah, that's probably
I don't know
John
by 20, but he probably wins.
John Katzenberger, then, similarly to what I just asked John, is the party of Eric Holcomb going to support Todd Rokita in the May primary?
Not as it stands now. I think that Representative Rokita made a decision when he decided to run with the president. And at the time, you could argue that made sense given the recent victory and the polling that showed that he was still popular. But everything that has happened since has accrued to work against Representative Rokita in the race. And I think by the time we get to May, he's really going to rue that decision.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question: will Representative Todd Rokita's remark that he was comfortable with Roy Moore spell trouble for him in the 2018 election? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question: will Senator Joe Donnelly's no vote on the tax bill come back to haunt him in the 2018 election? 64% say yes, it will. 36% say no. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Republican congressional leaders this week reportedly reached a deal on a $1.5 trillion tax bill that cuts corporate and individual rates while potentially ballooning the deficit. Some reported changes in the agreed-upon bill between House and Senate leaders: a 21% corporate rate rather than 20%, and the measure would lower the rate for earners in the highest tax bracket by more than 2%. Some popular deductions are back in, including those for graduate students and those with high out-of-pocket medical expenses. Also included in the deal is a repeal of the Affordable Care Act's mandate that most individuals must have health insurance or pay a penalty. Congressman Luke Messer had sent a letter to members of the Tax Bill Conference Committee urging them to include that provision, which had been in the Senate version of the bill, but not the House's. Mike O'Brien, does the individual mandate's repeal and its inclusion in this bill make this a much harder needle to thread?
I don't think it does. I think coming into the weekend here, there were more Senate Republicans signing on. No Democrats are going to vote for this, whether for the individual mandate reasons or other reasons that are in this tax reform package. What I think it does make harder or more difficult, there is a, which isn't being really reported on, there is a bipartisan effort to make changes to Obamacare to further reform health care and to make some changes to stabilize the health insurance market so that we don't see these, 20% year-over-year premium increases, companies leaving the marketplace because they can't provide coverage. It makes that harder. And I think if the individual mandate's repealed, Democrats are not going to come to the table on further reforming health care and making the changes that we do need to make to shore up the parts of Obamacare that are failing.
Are Republicans shooting themselves in the foot a little here?
I think the entire tax bill is unpopular. I think every poll I've seen has shown it unpopular by a wide margin. And the biggest thing long-term that is interesting to me is that Republicans have run with part of their brand being that they're fiscal stewards, that they're fiscally conservative, and this bill blows a howitzer through that messaging for the rest of the time that they're Republicans, because it adds one point whatever trillion to the deficit. So anybody who says that in the Republican Party from here on out that they're serious about cutting the deficit, they can't possibly be taken seriously.
This wasn't in the House version of the bill. This is something the Senate put in, and now it seems it's part of the final deal if it comes to that. Why push forward on something that's going to, at best, create some uncertainty, as Mike has pointed out?
Well, you could say that the whole tax bill is that, if you wanted to. But a couple of things from the Republican perspective. The mandate is something that they have long disliked. They really dislike that notion. This way they can say they've helped a little bit on the Obamacare front, taking away one of the things that they like least. And So they also appease some of their members. So I think from that small perspective, they think it's to their benefit to do that. But as Mike said, it really does make it difficult to do anything beyond that with the ACA if they remove that mandate, because then you've undermined the entire premise of the Affordable Care Act.
Republicans have long campaigned against Obamacare and for health care reform, and they haven't been able to get health care reform done under this president so far. If this passes, if the individual mandate repeal is included in the final tax bill and it goes through, is that good enough to take back to their voters and say, well, we did something?
In the short term, undoubtedly some voters who didn't like the prospect of being forced either to get insurance or pay a penalty will rejoice and say, great, you got government off our back. But keep in mind, a lot of the people who are likely to vote that way, if this measure's in there, represent hospitals in rural areas. I presume as a society, if there is no individual mandate and these individuals and their family members fall ill or injured seriously in a crash, we're not going to let them die on the curbside. I assume they will still be taken to a hospital, an ER, and I presume that hospital will still be compelled to deliver treatment and not be compensated. So you will have, as we've already seen, this is not a new development. That's why you have so many of administrators of hospitals around the country in a lot of red states saying this. It's not as if by eliminating the mandate you eliminate the financial burden associated with illness. It's just somebody else is going to bear it.
Two Indiana counties voted recently to extend their syringe exchanges, breaking a recent trend in the state. Syringe exchange programs were first created in 2015 in response to an HIV crisis in Scott County. They've since sprouted up in more than half a dozen counties across the state. And lawmakers earlier this year made it easier to create them, allowing counties to forge ahead without State Department of Health approval. But two counties shut down their exchanges earlier this year, in part due to so-called moral opposition. That's as a few leading figures, notably Attorney General Curtis Hill, argued against the effectiveness of such programs. Now, two counties, Monroe and Tippecanoe, have broken trend and voted to continue their exchanges, with Monroe opting for a 2-year extension.
John Schwannis, is the tide turning again on syringe exchanges?
Back and forth.
Yeah.
The science and the data all would suggest that this is the path that counties would want to take. The reason I would stop short of saying putting my finger in the wind or looking at whatever political barometer this is, I don't think the two counties in question are typical Indiana counties. They happen to be Bloomington and Lafayette, which last time I checked tend to be maybe a little more progressive, a little bit more.
One of the two, maybe.
I don't know. Here was the Obama chair in Indiana, which didn't those counties,
both counties?
Yeah, they both went for Obama. I think they were 2 of 10 in the first primary. So one would assume that there's a greater appreciation, perhaps, of the science, of the data, I'm not dismissing the moral aspect of this, but maybe they're saying
That overrides
those concerns because people otherwise are going to die or enter the healthcare system, and this is the most fiscally prudent way to approach it.
Curtis Hill and those who agree with him on this issue had won a couple of victories here. Is this a bulwark against that, or is it just a blip as his side continues to gain momentum?
I think there are two things to that question. One, I agree with John's analysis completely about the counties and the nature of those counties because of the people who live there. I mean, Indiana is a diverse state, and some counties are more progressive than other counties, so I agree with that completely. But the other part of your question implies the political nature of the question. And so we've injected politics into public health in the case of the syringe exchange. The data, the research show that when you do the exchanges, you reduce the incidence of bad outcomes like HIV and hepatitis. But you still have the underlying problem. And so the political will, I guess, ought to be applied to changing or fixing the underlying problem, which is the economic problem. And if you can fix that and use your political will to fix that rather than to fight against the science, you're more likely going to take care of all of the problem.
I would add addiction is another part of the problem, and we need to be more serious about spending money on addiction services, which we don't spend nearly enough money, but I agree with everything else that you said with that in regard to that.
If there's a county out there who leaders in that county maybe want to push forward on a syringe exchange, and they've looked at Lawrence and I want to say it's Madison, who have recently gone and rescinded their syringe exchanges, maybe disheartened by that, are they heartened by these two extensions, or is it because it's Tippecanoe and Monroe, it's like, well, that might play there, but it still might not play.
Well, I would hope health officials would look at the data, you know, and look at the science and make a decision that's in the best interest of the citizens of their county and not worry too much about the politics. That's what ought to happen.
Is there a little too much politics in this whole conversation right now in this state, or at least in parts of this state?
Well, I think the changes that Governor Holcomb advocated for last session that happened, that removed this ultimate decision-making from the state and moved it to the local level, is for that reason, for two reasons, really. I mean, yes, it takes the kind of the bigger picture statewide political discussion out of it. It allows locals to respond to their local needs and take their situation into consideration, and they can move quicker. They can address the situation more quickly.
All right. Well, Congressman Todd Rokita, as Mike O'Brien previewed for us earlier, Congressman Todd Rokita's campaign released a digital ad this week to celebrate the true meaning of Christmas, which is apparently attacking people.
Rokita's ad, released on the first night of Hanukkah, shows he and his family decorating their Christmas tree, as Rokita talks about this being their favorite time of year. He also notes it's important to remember what he says the season is really about, the birth of Christ.
In this age of liberal elites whose political correctness attacks everything we hold dear, let's instead stand up for our traditions and values. Let's say, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas!
John Katzenberger, why do this?
Because you lack the confidence of your own faith. I mean, Christmas is not under attack. Look around, people. Christmas is healthy, and it's fine. You do this because you're politically aligned, as we discussed earlier, with the notion that somebody's after you all the time, and that we want to exclude other people. So we make up these notions that Christmas is under attack, and instead what we do is we forget about our Muslim friends or our Jewish friends. Look, say Merry Christmas to whomever you want all the time. That's fine. But don't say that it's terrible and that you're taking Christ out of Christmas, because that's baloney. What you're doing is excluding other people. If you want to say Happy Holidays, fine. If you want to say Merry Christmas, fine. But to make an issue out of it is showing a real lack of confidence in your own faith and your own party.
Is that what's happening?
Yeah, I agree with what he said.
I just want to add
Mark that down. Yeah. It's a Christmas present from you. I don't want to make too big a deal out of it's a digital ad for Christmas. So on its own, it's not that big a deal. But I think it is in many ways symbolic of sort of the Todd Rokita strategy here that we did talk about earlier on the show. Quite frankly, is this a good strategy for the state of Indiana right now?
As conservative issues go, this is the dumbest one. if you're walking around...
Just say you agree with him, we can be done. Let's move on to that.
Because if you're walking around in life, and it's a sad life if you're walking around and someone says Happy Holidays and you're filled with fury and you feel like you're being attacked. I mean, this is insane. But if there's a political strategy goes, we'll put that aside. You know, if anyone's Christmas is under attack, it's mine. My wife is Jewish. We have a menorah next to our Christmas tree. I mean, this is the life that I'm living. It's great. And we're able to balance both of those things. And the kids, you know, we're able to raise our kids that way. And it's fantastic. The only reason you do this is to exclude, and because you just don't have the confidence, one, in your own faith, and you're just kind of insecure, and so you need to go alienate people. I mean, that's part of this. But as political strategies go, if you look at the U.S. Senate, let me get off my soapbox on my personal life. If you look at all the Senate candidates, the strategy here is we're all pro-life, but now Todd Rokita gets to go, but I'm the one who says Merry Christmas. You know, I mean, and maybe it gives you an edge in the margins, and that's kind of what primaries are about. It's like, you know, it's where Richard Murdoch went wrong in 2012. He had to be the most pro-lifeiest guy in the room when everybody else was pro-life, and it cost him.
Is this the same problem? It's good for the primary, bad for the general?
It's really Rokita adopting the Trump model and thinking that the Trump model is going to carry the day in the spring of 18. And, you know, all I want to say is Happy Festivus to all of you.
All right, well, Attorney General Curtis Hill and Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott had an interesting back and forth this week about Indiana's CBD oil or cannabidiol laws.
State lawmakers this year approved the use of CBD oil derived from marijuana or hemp to treat certain epilepsy conditions. But some of the state believe an earlier law allows broader use of CBD oil in small amounts. Attorney General Curtis Hill wrote an advisory opinion in recent weeks saying he believes CBD oil possession and sale is illegal in the Hoosier state, except under the limited circumstances in this year's law. That all led to a testy exchange this week during a panel Hill participated in. Hammond Mayor Tom McDermott, a Democrat, accused the Republican AG of grandstanding on the issue of CBD and marijuana policy, and McDermott noted he buys a CBD product to help his elderly dog. Hill informed McDermott that he was in violation of Indiana law. You, he said, not your dog.
You, not your dog. Kip, too. Is Tom McDermott about to get raided by the excise police?
I think Tom McDermott has got himself some statewide exposure that he hasn't had before, and there's lots of talk about him as a governor's candidate.
Hoosiers all over the state
get to know Tom
McDermott.
He's got a Trump personality in some ways, so he may be right for the times.
I want to ask about the fundamental argument here, which is, in his own needling, almost joking, half-joking kind of way, Tom McDermott has exposed something, which is it's really easy to buy CBD products in this state right now.
I think he's winning the argument. I mean, to be serious about it, I think he's really winning the argument, and Hill has given him a platform. And, you know, I think Hill couldn't be more in a more dangerous position by pushing this the way he is, because I don't think even primary voters in the Republican Party think that he's on the right side when it comes to this issue.
Well, what I think he's doing is just saying, look, the law is not clear. It's still a violation of the federal law. It's a violation of the state law, except in this very narrow, like, registration circumstance where you register. And he's doing kind of what attorney generals need to do, which is, legislature, you got to go figure this out. And my read, Curtis Hill, is that the law continues to prohibit this. The governor has said, we're not going to enforce it for 60 days to allow the legislature to address it. But in doing so, in the context of a legislative session, that Republicans, even though there's a growing number of Republicans and libertarian-minded Republicans who want to see an expansion into medical marijuana, it looked like the legislature was going to address this. Curtis Hill did not want them to address it, and now there is a vehicle for that discussion and that debate to take place, and a piece of legislation that is going to move through the process that is a perfect fit for it.
And that was exactly my next point, which is Curtis Hill by... Yes. The first thing he says is, I'm the attorney general, I'm merely interpreting what the law says. But then if you ask him a couple more questions, he's more than
happy to say, I oppose any further
steps in this. Maybe not so much on the CBD side, but certainly on the marijuana side. But is his fervent opposition to this actually pushing the discussion forward in the other direction?
Well, it has pushed I think that's a fact. And you're right, the attorney general, it is his or her responsibility to give a legal opinion. But sometimes those opinions are just released without fanfare, and you may not ever know. You know, it just goes from office to office.
Curtis Hill is not.
And then there are other times. And then there are other times. You know, they're released with a little more fanfare and a little higher volume, and that's obviously you can read into that what you want. But it does bring it to a head. And the exchange that you focused on was from one breakout session at a day-long legislative conference this week. And I guess I would take for further guidance. After that exchange was a panel with legislative leadership, and what I took away from that was from the caucus leaders there were they're going to take care of the cannabis oil aspect of this, and by taking care of it, I mean they will make sure that Curtis Hill understands that that is acceptable and that Tom McDermott's dog should not be put in the poke.
Well, hey, look, the governor said that he might let his dog use CBD oil, so I think the governor himself, you know, the governor and Hill are frenemies at best is what I would say about it, and then he's taking the other side.
There's nothing this state won't do for Henry Holcomb.
That's right.
Or the internets, for that matter.
Or dogs.
So John's absolutely right. When you listen to the legislative leaders, particularly David Long and Brian Bosman, they seem to indicate that they are going to come back and clarify what they did last session and say, no, you can have CBD oil only if you have this very specific set of epileptic conditions and for no other reason. That is what they want to happen. How successful will they be at making sure that is the only thing that happens?
Well, I mean, the truth is they have the ultimate power, but they have opened Pandora's box in that regard, and this vehicle being out there allows every legislator, all 148 others of them, to add their perspective and viewpoint on all of this. So I think that it'll be a very interesting session in that regard.
All right, well, finally, House Democrats this week tweeted a celebratory message on Statehood Day, marking the 201st year since Indiana became a state.
That tweet included Republican Governor Eric Holcomb's next level slogan. So, Mike O'Brien, is this an era of bipartisanship under new House Democratic leader Terry Gooden?
I think Governor Eric Holcomb is a governor for all people in this state. I don't think it's the last time you're going to see Democrats try to align themselves with what has become a historically popular governor.
I don't assume that this was under Terry Gooden's direction, but given that Terry Gooden is the new leader of the House Democrats, do you think it might be a little more bipartisanship than we've seen in the past?
I think there's been plenty of bipartisanship with House Democratic leadership for a couple of years now, so I don't think this is a big change in that regard. And when the governor is aligned with what Democrats believe, they're going to praise him, and when they don't, they're going to fight about it. That's the way it ought to be.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Kip Two, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.